Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a goal aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as a key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, how's your week going?
Week's going great. Month is going great. Summer's going great. It's all good. And of course, looking forward, as always, to chatting with our guest today. I think this is going to be really insightful and very important for some people to hear about. So really looking forward to meeting our guest today.
Yeah, me too. And joining us today is Suze Mason. She is one of the co-founders of Sprout Family, a virtual care platform for fertility and family building. Sprout is working to improve Canadians' access to fertility, surrogacy, and adoption care through their employee benefits plan. Before starting Sprout, Suze helped build and scale operations teams at multiple Toronto tech companies and received her CPA designation from PwC. Suze, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. Happy Friday, everyone.
Happy Friday to you. And before we get started, we have to give a shout out to one of our friends who introduced us. It's funny, the people that I become friends with through the podcast, they seem to know me quite well, Al and I, who we're going to want to talk to. And yet again, here we are meeting someone great, thanks to Roy Wehner at Townish. So Roy, I know you're listening. Thank you very much for the introduction. Let's dive right into the topic, because I think it's really important, especially these days, Suze. Years ago, people weren't talking about this as much. And, you know, I have personal experience around that. Let's start at the beginning. What led you down the path to start this type of business?
Yeah, so we started Sprout because we wanted to improve Canadians' access to fertility, surrogacy, and adoption, regardless of their age, their gender, their sexual orientation. We felt like people, Canadians specifically, needed access to this type of care, and it wasn't really available in the market. My co-founder, Jackie, and I, we both had run up against our own experiences trying to access reproductive health care. And I think there's a bit of a misconception in Canada where you're like, oh, well, we have public health care, so these types of things will be covered if you need to get tested or you need support. And then learned very quickly that fertility care is actually separate from that system. It's under a private pay basis, so it gets very expensive for people that are going through any sort of treatment or need support. And we both had our own like personal journey. So my co-founder, she actually came from, as you said, like it's much more common to talk about these things, but she actually, her entire family was built with assisted reproduction. So her and her twin sister were both born through IVF. Their brother was adopted. So it's been a big topic of conversation within their household her whole life. So something that she spoke openly about. And I actually came from like a slightly different space that not a lot of people within the fertility space speak openly about. You might have to put a trigger warning on this, but I had an abortion 2 years ago that really disrupted my mental health. And after making the decision to terminate that pregnancy, I kind of spiraled and I started regretting that choice because I knew so many people that had dealt with infertility. And I thought that, you know, if I later couldn't get pregnant and I'd given up on that only chance, like how would that impact the rest of my life? And so being the very proactive type A person that I am, I was like, okay, I need to go out and do some research and actually understand like how I can solve this for myself. And that got me researching like egg freezing, testing your reproductive health. And I realized that it's such a gap in our education that we don't even talk about this, like in sex ed classes when you're growing up. And I went and got tested, learned that my reproductive health was fine. This isn't something I immediately need to worry about. And it took a huge weight off my shoulders. Like I was so concerned about my biological clock being a 30-year-old woman, like wondering what that was going to look like for my longer-term trajectory. And as soon as I got tested, I was like, oh, like knowledge is power. And the science exists for us to have this type of information. So it's kind of crazy that this isn't something that we consider to be like a necessary point of care within our healthcare or within our like benefit system. So anyways, it's a long story to say that we honestly just felt like it was something that was popping up in our own personal lives and so much across our communities. And we wanted to go out and figure out how we could address that gap for Canadians.
Well, I'm glad you are. I'm glad you're talking about it. I'm glad we can have a platform to help share the message of what you're doing, because I think it's really important. Aside from your specific business, starting a business, leaving the world of full-time employment and everything that comes along with that, it's scary, right? Like, I've been through it. Thankfully, I think we're well into our life of our company now, but it's really scary in the beginning. So what gave you the confidence that you know, I'm going out to start this and I'm going to be successful? Because I imagine that'd be, you know, there'd be a little bit of trepidation there.
Yeah. So when we got started, Jackie and I were both first-time founders. So while we both had experience working at other tech companies, we did really feel like if we're going to jump into this full-time, we need to have confidence that there actually is like a business model here. And I think that one thing that is happening, because fertility is a bit of a hot topic right now, and maybe that's just because I'm in the bubble, but there's a lot of people like thinking about how they can improve fertility access. And we didn't want to just add another piece of complexity to what's already a pretty complicated system. We want to feel like we are actually creating value for the different stakeholder groups that would be involved here. So the first one is like the end users or the employees that are actually in need of care. And we were hearing loud and clear from user interviews that that group was looking for support. There wasn't really a question there. A lot of people were running up in this issue and surprised by how big an issue it was in their life. But what we learned from those conversations was that while the finances were an expected problem, if people knew that going through IVF or going through egg freezing or adoption, it's all very, very expensive. What people didn't anticipate is how complicated and stressful the journey would be. And the challenge of being able to pick the right providers, where if you're going to spend, you know, $20,000 going through an IVF cycle, which IVF is in vitro fertilization, is that going to be a successful outcome for you? And how do you actually know that you're working with providers that are going to get to that goal? And so we then spoke with all these different fertility clinics, family lawyers, surrogacy agencies, people across the industry that were actually providing the services. And one of the topics of conversation in that group was that there's wait lists and people are hearing like, oh, you can't even get into a fertility clinic because there's such long wait lists. So when we spoke with them, we said, if we were to refer patients to you, can you even take them in? Is there even capacity? And what we heard time and time again is they absolutely have capacity if people come to them actually ready to get started on a journey. The reason they're running up into such issues with wait lists is that people get started with fertility. They'll go to the clinic or get referred by their GP. But when they arrive, then they end up in a situation where like they hear that it's going to cost so much money, or they hear how long and complicated it's going to be. And then naturally they churn out and they've spent time with the doctor, time doing a consultation. So it's really difficult for the providers to have that funnel of referred clients if they're not educated and financially prepared for the journey they're about to embark on. And so that's where the employer benefit really comes in and can add a lot of value here, where if employers are offering basically a tax efficient way to cover these types of benefits, and they're hopefully providing some other sort of support for people to be educated on what these journeys look like, then they can make sure that when they are supporting their employees on going through their journey, that they'll actually be able to get access to the right providers and overall just create a more efficient like ecosystem. So we really felt that we could bring these three groups together of the employees, the employers, and the service providers and provide real value by actually having them all aligned on like the different needs of each group.
Suze, you've shared some personal experience with this, which is great. And you're right, probably not the conversation that comes up around the dinner table. Not something that's talked about a whole lot, just like mental health, probably something that's becoming a little bit more mainstream and people are feeling a little bit more comfortable speaking about this. Can you share maybe some experiences that you've seen through running your company? One, maybe a positive story that's worked out, and maybe because you've made it more accessible and easier to talk about. So maybe a success, but also maybe some pushback that you've maybe seen from, you know, whether it be employers or whoever that just think this isn't a good idea and shouldn't be talked about.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that we still are running up against the objection from employers. Well, if I offer family building benefits, then won't I have a whole bunch of my people go on parental leave? Which is a very fair concern. Like if you're a business owner, that's something that you do have to plan for and manage. So I'll maybe touch on that in a second after talking about first on the positive side. What's been really, really exciting about now having active members on our platform, seeing people go through the journey, is that overall, we're seeing much higher utilization than we expected. I think we were concerned when we launched. We're like, is this a niche business? We think it's a big topic of conversation, but is it actually a large problem for a large employee base? And that's been one thing that we're seeing, a much higher utilization than we expected. And some exciting trends within those groups is the first thing that a lot of our members that are active are actually seeking proactive care, which is really what we want to see, right? We don't want to continue this issue where people are deciding to have kids, they're 33, 35, starting their family building journey and run into a fertility crisis at that point. What we'd love is for people in their 20s and 30s to understand this journey in a little bit more depth and take steps earlier on to prepare for their longer term family planning. And so that's been really refreshing about our member activity. It's a lot of people in their 20s that saw their older siblings or their friends or their colleagues go through a family building crisis. And so they want to take steps today to learn how they can be proactive. And in many cases, like, there's a lot of talk around egg freezing is something that's becoming more and more popular. We're not always pushing for that expensive route. In many cases, like, if you're in your 20s, a great place to get started is just getting a test done. So you can track year over year, is your overall reproductive health relatively stable? Is it declining? Is it changing? And monitor that just like you would monitor anything else around your overall wellness. So that's been one exciting thing. And then the other thing that has been really positive to see is that we were worried that this was going to be something that a bunch of women sign on, but then men still aren't taking an active role. And that's been really refreshing that we actually have, out of our active members, 45% of them are men. And they're not just there to log on and pass it on to their female partner. We've had such lovely conversations with our male members where they've explained that, you know, for those in heterosexual relationships, they know their partner is going to be the one that is undergoing treatments. And so they want to do what they can to, like, simplify the process, understand the finances, and make sure that their whole family is getting access to quality care. So it's been really, really nice to see that trend, both from, like, people younger taking steps to avoid crises later on. And then this is overall a gender neutral issue. Like, this is a humanity problem, not just a woman's problem. But then to go back to your earlier point around, like, we still are going to receive rejection. This is a newer benefit for Canadian employers. And so, yeah, I'd say the biggest point of objection that we have coming up with HR teams is that they're worried that it's going to actually lead to so many people taking parental leave, and then they're going to need to pay for top up on that or deal with the absences. And so we pushed back on that for a couple of reasons. The first is that realistically, your employees have lives outside of work. So while an employer might want to be, like, the absolute number one priority, in reality, if someone is thinking about having a family, they're going to work towards that goal either way. And so having support from their employer is probably, like, the right thing to do. And then the second point is that if your employees are going to do that either way, then wouldn't you rather that they actually have success in the journey and get the care that they need so that this can be as efficient a process to really get to those outcomes? We've heard countless stories of employees that are struggling on a family building journey, and it leads to time away from work, mental health claims, attrition. The number one thing that's talked about in the fertility world is the worst thing for your fertility is stress. So people leaving their businesses because they are dealing with the stress of a family building journey. And so definitely in the best interest of the employer to actually say, can we provide the right care so that you can get to your end goal?
Yeah, you talked about a lot there, and you hit on a number of things, obviously, from the employer's perspective. Of course, people immediately think, you know, the negative, but you just hit on a whole lot of the positives that are going to happen anyway, right? The stress, the fatigue, and the lack of productivity. So it's obviously in the employer's best interest to be able to do this. Can you maybe talk about, because you haven't talked about it yet, and I'm wondering if maybe you can provide a little bit of insight on, again, kind of a, maybe another controversy or a hot topic, surrogacy, parenthood. Like, can you talk a little bit about that and maybe some experiences you've had with that?
Yeah, so surrogacy is a really interesting one in Canada. It's confusing from the beginning because people aren't even sure if it's legal. Within Canada, surrogacy is, like, a totally legal way to build your family. The challenge with the way that our parenthood laws are structured is that you cannot pay a woman to be a surrogate in Canada. So altruistic surrogacy is totally fine. So if someone volunteers, decides to support you and your family, that's totally fine. But they can't be compensated for basically helping you build your family. And so that's what is leading to the massive shortages and, like, basically surrogate matches within the Canadian market. The ratios are unclear, but what we hear in the industry is it's about a 30-to-1 ratio of parents that are intending to build their families through surrogacy and actual surrogate matches within Canada. So that then leads to people having to find other alternatives internationally. So option A is you sit on the Canadian wait list for a really long time. You work with an agency. Hopefully you're working with a reputable agency that actually is going to be transparent about the amount of time that it's going to take to get that match. But if that doesn't feel like a feasible option for you, or it does seem like it's going to be too much time, there is an option to go international. So for a while, Ukraine was actually a really popular place for Canadian parents to find their surrogates. That is less so given the political dynamics there. So the US has always been a popular one, where in the US, a surrogate can be paid, but that naturally leads to a much higher set of costs as a Canadian parent. Like we're talking like north of $200,000 potentially to work with a US surrogate when you think about the all-in costs of the medical procedures, compensating the surrogate, the translating to US dollars. It all gets very expensive very fast. And so another area that's actually popping up in more popularity is Mexico, where it's, again, like relatively close to Canada, and they're at a place where the healthcare systems and the care that are received by the surrogates in Mexico is considered to be like at a quality that most Canadians are very, very comfortable with. And so that's a growing industry. And one of the things that we want to always support our members with is helping them understand like these different dynamics. We don't want people sitting on wait lists that are going to go nowhere, or spending money working with different agencies, whether it's local or international, that aren't actually going to lead to a match. So helping people understand like, what are these dynamics? What is the pathway that makes the most sense for you, for your time, for your budget? And then supporting them with actually finding the right providers within that location.
This is, again, such an interesting topic. And the first time I spoke with you, I learned a ton, and I'm learning even more here today. And again, Al, it's like things that we traditionally haven't sat around the dinner table to talk about, but I think it's certainly warranted. Mm-hmm. In my arena, in the employee benefits world, in your chats with CEOs and C-suites and VP people and chief people officers, what are those conversations looking like? And I'm looking forward to your answer, but I'm going to do something I haven't done on the podcast yet, is I would love to hear from our community, because we have a shared community of who we're working with. I would love to hear feedback on this topic and how it fits and when it fits and why it fits into employee benefit. Because Suze, I'll share that information back with you, because I think it's valuable for both of us, because again, we're working in the same space. But I'd just love to hear how those conversations have been going. Has it been readily accepted? Are there objections? You know, what are you seeing?
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. I would appreciate any feedback, because this is like a new topic of conversation. Mm-hmm. But I think what's been really motivating from the conversations that we're having with HRs and like other leadership is that this isn't a totally new concept entirely. The US is much further ahead when it actually comes to family building benefits. So in the US, there's about 50% of companies that are offering coverage for fertility care. And in Canada, that stands at 2%, as I mentioned. So that's outside of fertility drugs. So one of the nuances of this industry is that a lot of employers or even HR teams think that they have coverage for fertility when they have fertility drugs in their benefits plan. And that's an amazing start. It's obviously helpful. Anything is helpful. Typically, that drug coverage will be like $2,000 to $3,000. And that's really only useful if you're, you know, for example, the heterosexual couple that gets diagnosed with IVF that's going through a fertility journey. Your IVF procedure won't be covered, but at least a little bit of your drugs will be covered. So that's helpful. But as we have more conversations with HR teams, we're helping them understand that that is a good start, but it's really not going to be able to solve the problem for the broader, diverse team base that you have, right? Like people going through surrogacy, going through adoption, egg donors, sperm donors, none of that is going to be applicable to fertility drug coverage. So we're excited that it's at least something that they understand that this is becoming a more popular option. They're having questions within their own teams of people saying, do we have this coverage? And so now we're helping employers understand that checking the box with fertility drug coverage is probably not necessarily going to get you all the way there to have a satisfied employee base. And so what does it look like to build up a more diverse package? And I think that when most HR teams that we're talking about, it's not necessarily a question of if they'll do it, but really when. Obviously, within the decision-making process of benefits, if you're going to offer something new, you really, really want to be confident. You don't want to offer a new benefit and then pull it back the next year because of budget concerns. So for them, they're being thoughtful about, is this the right time for us to offer this new and novel benefit to our employees? If we are going to offer it, how do we do it effectively and make sure that those dollars are going to be spent in a way that actually drives to the outcomes and meets the diverse needs of their employee base? And so those, I'd say, are the things that lead to the friction in the decision making. It's just that it is a really big decision to add to your benefits package, but it's not a lack of education around the fact that this is a growing need. Like, HR teams are well aware of that piece. It's just a matter of when's the right time to make the change.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, hopefully we get some feedback. And you never know, Suze, maybe there are some joint meetings in our future.
Well, I always hope so.
Yes, exactly. No, that's great.
Suze, maybe you can talk a little bit about, and you can talk about this personally, or you can talk about this professionally. Let's look forward. What does success look like to you?
So for us, really, our initial goal was to solve this problem for Canadians and help feel like we're removing the barrier of access to family building care. Longer term, we actually want to broaden that. And we do think there is an international need here. While the US has made a lot of tractions internationally, this is not something that has been addressed in every country. And so we want to look at other countries that have a similar healthcare dynamic where it's a public healthcare system, but private fertility, and say, like, how can we take the learnings that we get from the Canadian market and expand to those other international opportunities? But then the second piece of, like, our long-term journey is we don't necessarily want to be just the solution for family building. There's a lot of crossover in the products and the relationships that we're building within the family building space that could be useful in other types of, like, the family journey. So whether that's things like pre and postnatal care, menopause support, we want to ultimately be like the go-to virtual care platform for family wellness and help people in every chapter of their life and make sure that we are actually providing value to members at different points of their own journey. So that's probably the longer term journey, is like, solve this for Canada, expand internationally, launch into other chapters of family building. And yeah, if we could hit all those milestones, I don't know how long it'll take, but that would be the dream.
Well, that's ambitious, but it sounds like you're on the right track. And you said a couple things. You said it there. You said it earlier when you talked about younger couples who maybe weren't to the stage yet where they were starting to build a family. And I think back to some other people that we've had on the show who have been talking about the healthcare system. And it's, you know, the comment was, we don't really have a healthcare system. We have a sick care system because, you know, we're reactive. But it really does sound like you are focused more on the healthcare, like making sure that you're healthy before you go into this, and then addressing it after the fact on a more preventative basis rather than a reactive basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that really this is an area where, like, knowledge is power. Like, when you go through school, all that you learn in sex ed is how to not have babies. And then people hit the point where they actually want to have children and then they realize how complicated it is. And it's crazy that there's probably 20 years in between where there's no action taken or no thought around that important part of your life. So I think that it's a bit of a societal shift. I read a headline the other day that was like, Gen Z is panicking about their fertility care. Should they be worried about it? And on the one hand, we don't want to swing too far to the other direction of making people feel a sense of panic when the stats suggest it's 1 in 6 couples will struggle with infertility. So it's not necessarily every single person is going to run into this type of issue. But what we want is for people to understand their own body and understand, okay, like, what are the factors that could have an implication on my long-term reproductive health, whether you're a man or a woman, it doesn't matter. And so that's why it's really about presenting them with basic knowledge around what it takes to make sure that you have a healthy reproductive system, and then what you can do to learn about your own body. All the averages that are out there, they're helpful, but not really. Like, everyone talks about, oh, you're a woman, you turn 35, your fertility drops off a cliff. That's sort of true when you look at averages, but it's not actually true for everyone's individual healthcare. So going out and getting tested is so important. And we don't want necessarily people to feel panic or feel like, oh, I have to go freeze my eggs, freeze my sperm. What we want is for you to understand, like, your own data and be able to follow those trends year over year, so that if something changes, and if, for example, you know, as a woman, I see my ovarian reserve start to drop off, sure, then I will either have a conversation with my husband about having kids or go and think about egg freezing. But I'm not going to take those more intensive steps unless I actually feel like the data is suggesting that that's what my reproductive healthcare system needs.
Suze, you're clearly passionate about what you do. And we've talked about the company and your mission and what you're trying to do. But we sat down with a good friend of the podcast, Christine Song, last summer on a patio. And she said, I love the podcast. They're always interesting. You're talking to different people. But I always appreciate when we get to know the person as well. So outside of what you're doing on a day-to-day in your job, what's your other passion? Like, what do you do? What do you do outside of work?
I'm an active person, not athletic, very active, training for a half marathon right now. But I kind of think that's just what everyone in Toronto does when summer hits. You decide that you're going to sign up for a half marathon. Yeah, skiing, biking, running are the things that keep me happy. And my little dog, Koji, is the source of all joy in my life.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, I live out in the Leslieville area for anyone that's East End Toronto. It's a lovely little community and feel very blessed to be at this chapter of my life where I can focus most of my time on building my business, but then have a lovely community to fill up the rest of my time.
Ah, very cool. Very cool.
I heard dog in there and I heard bike in there. So
yeah, Al's ears perked up right away.
Well, I come from a family with, we had 5 dogs growing up, 6 kids, 5 dogs.
Wow.
And so then when COVID hit and I didn't have a dog, I asked my mom if I could just borrow one. And then I took it and I never gave it back. So that's how I landed with my Shih Tzu.
Oh, that's great. Al has a signature question that he always asks. To me, you've answered it in spades, but I think we should ask it anyway. But to me, it's very evident what you're doing for this question. But Al, I'll let you take it away anyway.
Yeah, you never know. There might be something outside of work that you're doing that is special to you too. So here it goes. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you're planting?
Mm-hmm. So I'd say I'm probably one of the lucky ones where the job that I'm doing is actually the thing that I care the most about. And it's really motivating building a company that I feel like has a social impact. And it's nice to be able to talk to members and stay grounded on like the human impact at the end of the day. My ultimate dream would be a future where everyone has access to the medical support they need. They can find their surrogate match. Women don't have to worry about their biological clocks. But I also recognize like that's probably not within the scope of what we're building at Sprout. We're not going to be able to change women's biological clocks. But what we can do is definitely change the narrative around family building and how reduce the stigma, help people understand that this isn't a woman's issue, it's a human issue, and make sure everyone has the education and resources that they need to be proactive and really feel in control of this journey. So while I can't change biology yet, I'd like to think that I could change the social conversation around family building.
Perfect. So I echo Robin's sentiments. I've learned a lot today. I'm glad that you joined us to talk about this, and hopefully it'll put the conversation a little bit more mainstream than it is right now.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for finding the time. It was really a great conversation and hopefully useful to some of your listeners.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. Thanks so much for joining us today, and thank you for sharing your story. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing at Sprout Family?
Any information on Sprout, you can find at sproutfamily.ca, but then I'm Suzanne Mason on LinkedIn, so search me up anytime and send me a DM. Would love to chat.
Wonderful. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al and myself, please feel free to give us a call or join the conversation on LinkedIn. Always remember, success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.